time for The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist on-air show is heard every Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m. in northeastern Ohio on WJCU 88.7 FM and streamed at WJCU.org. Our weekly podcast is available at the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com or download it with your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for April 4th, 2020. As we continue to hunker down and shelter in place, keeping our physical distance from one another, washing our hands, not touching our faces, and wearing protective masks and gloves when we do venture out, I can proudly say that our governor, Mike DeWine, has stepped up to the plate, swung for the fences, and hit a grand slam. Nope, we haven't beaten the virus here in Ohio yet, but we are heeding his wise words. We're listening to his daily 2 p.m. press conferences, and we're watching as his team takes on what has to be one of the most daunting projects of his political career, containing and eventually beating this virus. There are many people who may not have voted for him in the last gubernatorial election, but we are all pretty much agreed that he has absolutely the correct choice to lead our state to what will be a less painful solution than many others are going to experience. So a big shout out to the governor, his medical chief of staff, Dr. Amy Acton, and Lieutenant Governor John Husted for their tireless efforts on our behalf. I do hope all of you are healthy and finding ways to stay strong, both mentally and physically. I've taken my yoga classes online with the amazing Zoom platform, and it helps to keep me connected to my yoga community. I'd highly recommend finding your community and connecting however you're able to remotely do that. All that said, I do have a show for you this week. However, it's a little different from what I had planned as my guest in Colorado Springs is recovering from being sick. She has agreed to come back next week, and I hope to have her on the show. I hope she's feeling better. In her place, I have an encore presentation of our conversation from April of 2017 with the amazing frame painter, Joe Bell. So, do you hear that sound? It's the sound of the tour to quarantine. If you need a little fun, and don't we all, Brad Soner is currently sheltered in place at his home in Pittsburgh. Brad Soner is a well-known race announcer. And Brad has taken those immense talents as a race announcer, and while peering out at the bike path that runs across from his apartment window, he began filming the riders passing by. Then he added some commentary. Then he added some sound effects. And well, I'll let him tell you about the tour to quarantine. Hey, Brad, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week. I hope you are well and that everyone around you is healthy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We are safe in lockdown here in Pittsburgh.
Same as in Cleveland. And I'm glad to hear that, that everybody is well. So everything's been canceled. I mean, most of the racing season's been canceled. Most of us are in quarantine of one sort or another. You found a cool way to keep it real and really funny. Before we delve into the tour of quarantine, though, tell us a bit about Brad, where you grew up, how you got into race announcing, and some of your background with the graphics you're doing.
Yeah, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, so not far from where I am now, and actually got my start in bike racing there. My first summer job was working for an event services company. So when I was like 15 years old, I would travel around most of the Midwest and East Coast, going to American bike races, and we would set up all the infrastructure, the stage and the fence and the sound system and photo finish and all that stuff. So I got my start kind of behind the scenes in bike racing, and that was where I really fell in love with the sport of cycling. Was watching American bike racing and a lot of Criterions and stuff like that. And then just from kind of hanging around the races, it was sort of a natural transition to move into commentary. I was blessed with this very unique voice, and there were a few people along the way that said, "Hey, you got a good voice. You know the sport. You got some passion for it. You should give announcing and commentating a shot." And so I did. I announced my first bike race when I was 16 years old, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. Before I knew it, you know, people were asking me to come to their race, and then someone would hear me there. And I went to college, got an advertising degree at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And then when I graduated, I was kind of in this unique place where if I really made a run at it and invested some time, I realized that I could probably make a living being a pro cycling commentator. So that was almost 10 years ago. And 10 years later, here I am.
There you are. So did you ever want to race bicycles yourself?
I was never much of a racer. I did a few races, but you know, I was always working behind the scenes. And that was kind of what captivated me with the sport was, you know, creating these experiences and races. So I love riding. I ride as much as I can. I'm an avid rider and commuter here in Pittsburgh, too. But yeah, I never really raced much. I figured I'd leave that to more qualified people.
Well, it's interesting that you became an announcer because it is a very unique field, and it takes a very special kind of person to, you know what's going on, know who the riders are, who's in the lead. You have to keep track of so much stuff when you're announcing a race.
Yeah, there's a lot of research and, you know, a lot of information that just kind of gets stored over the years of announcing. People always ask me, you know, do you study? How do you learn about the riders? You know, we study as much as we can. We try to look at the riders, but it's amazing how much you learn just from being around the races. Hotel shuttle, waiting on a flight to board, the breakfast room at the hotel, where you just kind of run into these riders and learn about them. So, and it's always changing too. So, I'm always happy to meet new riders and learn about new athletes, but, yeah, that's kind of the art of the job. And then also trying to translate that into something that, the average viewer at home can understand and appreciate, because cycling can be a very complex sport. So I view my job as trying to make it accessible to as many people as possible so that, when you tune in on TV and you see 150 people riding in a group, you understand, you know, why it's beautiful and what's happening and the tactics and teamwork and all the stuff that makes pro cycling great.
Really, really. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Brad Soner. He is a pro bike race announcer, and he has some sort of background in advertising and graphics, and we'll get to that in a moment. What are some of the more memorable events that you've worked on and that you really enjoyed doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Tour of California here in the United States was probably our biggest and best stage race, on hiatus here for 2020. But in my time in the sport, I think that was probably the best event experience for me. I also got to do the 2012 Olympics in London with NBC as a spotter for them for their cycling coverage. That was a pretty cool experience working the Olympics. But my real passion, I think my favorite races to work are Criterion races, where we can go into a city where most people probably haven't really experienced bike racing, and we can entertain them for a couple hours with a sport that they've never seen before. And then hopefully it sparks some interest, and then we can build on that when they leave. So as many, you know, big races I do, I work a lot in China too. I do a lot of the BCI Asia Tour races. But there's something about the American Criterion races that I really love.
Well, number one, they're fast and furious. So, and Americans love, you know, a good show that they can see over and over. It's a short circuit race and a lot of people crash. You know, that's America. Drink a beer, watch people fall down. So,
yeah, I always compare Criterion racing to like what we do with food in America, where we kind of made this our own thing. Just like, you know, Italian food, pizza, we took authentic food and then we bring it to America and make it our own thing. We add pineapple and stuff the crust and whatever. You know, Chinese food, we make General Tso's chicken and orange chicken and stuff that, you know, you'll never find in China. But it's our thing. It's our interpretation on it, and we love it, and that's what makes it great. So that's kind of how I view Criterion racing. It's it's our version of bike racing.
So I want to ask you something about language. So if you travel to China, and I know you cover whatever you cover, but how is the language, or is there a language barrier when you go to places like Italy or France or China, or, you know, even go to the South where people don't sound like we do here in the North, and you have to really kind of interpret what some people say, you know, these colloquialisms?
Yeah, I mean, luckily English is pretty universally accepted at this point around the world. You can usually find someone that can speak English, but yeah, it's a whole different world. You know, trying to work in a foreign country or announcing in a foreign country, I always announce in English. For example, the World Feed for the UCI races in China, they have a international broadcast with an English language commentator. So that's my role there. But there's a lot of things in cycling that don't really have a direct translation. You know, words that maybe we borrowed from French into English that are then hard to translate back into Chinese, like peloton or echelon or something like that. So trying to find how to describe those terms and how to describe those words in a foreign language is sometimes an exercise in language.
Keeps you on your toes.
That's right.
Clearly. Clearly.
That's what's fun about the sport.
Well, I think it's time we talk about your current project, because you are sheltered in place. Let's talk about Tour de Quarantine. What made you come up with this? Have you done it in the past, or is this all brand new?
No, this was a project born out of boredom. I was stuck in my apartment one day with the coming to the realization that it would probably be at least a few months before we saw any bike racing. And all the views that you see in Tour de Quarantine are out of my apartment window. So I was sitting drinking a cup of coffee one morning, and I saw a couple riders out there that were kind of going back and forth. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, it kind of looks like a race. So I thought I would just film it and, you know, maybe add some commentary, just a little fun for social media. But being the tinkerer that I am, the perfectionist that I tend to be, then it was, well, what if I just add a few sound effects? And then what if I just add a replay? And then what if we add graphics? And then before I knew it, it had this sort of full-fledged grand tour feel to it. And I thought that was cool. I think that's what kind of makes it special. It's kind of comforting to hear the sound of a helicopter and see those graphics of the GC. It kind of, you know, reminds us of better times to come. So I had no idea that it was going to turn into the internet sensation that it has become. And I didn't even know if I planned on doing a second stage. But after the response I got from stage one, you know, a ton of people reached out and said, this is awesome. I look, you know, please do another one of these. You know, I knew I had to do it. So the fact that I can put some smiles on people's faces in a tough time, it was a no-brainer for me to keep going with it.
It is awesome, and it is entertaining. And even though they're short, you can really sort of get into each one, and you sort of get this, like the dog yesterday's stage with the guy with the dog in the trailer and the girl on the e-bike, and I'm hoping people are starting to get the idea of what's going on. Where did you get all this sound, these sound effects? I mean, they are clearly race effects. Cowbells and...
I also produce some live events, produce the live streams or television coverage for a lot of races here in the U.S. So I had all this footage from races that we had done. And so it was easy to pull that audio out and get the sound effects. Some things I had to go hunting for, like the very specific Tour de France horn where you hear when they come through. So that was added in. But yeah, most of the stuff I had on hand. And then the graphics, you know, I had that skill set from producing shows and being able to create graphics for those. So it was really plug and play for me. It was an easy way to sort of use the skills that I had to have some fun and create some content.
So are you still seeing people out of your window and still filming, or are you using footage that you've already got to continue with the series?
Yeah, I did shoot a lot of footage early on. I've been pleased to see that people have been spacing themselves out more and more on the bike path. So while that is negatively affecting the coverage for Tour de Quarantine, I would much rather see the general public health crisis be solved with social distancing and all that. So I've got some racing in the bank. Let's say you know, anytime I see something good out the window, I try and record it. But, yeah, I am noticing a distinct drop in, participants in the Tour de Quarantine, let's say, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So you're up to, yesterday you were up to, I think, stage 9. Is that right?
I think, yes.
Okay. So how many stages
do you count? I've been in this apartment way too long.
Oh,
so
I think I saw stage 9. Yeah. So so what do you think? You're going to keep doing it? Or, I mean, are we going to have like a final, you know, race to the finish?
Yeah, I think this tour will probably wrap up here in a few days, just because, you know, I want to be able to reset the storylines and bring some new characters in. So I'm thinking maybe we'll see 3 grand tours in the tour. You know, maybe we'll have a Tour de Quarantine, a Giro Quarantine, and a Vuelta Quarantine.
That's awesome. That's just awesome. So now people maybe people need to pick their winners, and we'll turn, I don't know, and turn it into a game of some sort. But it's really, really cool. Really cool. So I had another question, which of course just escaped me, and I'll get it back. Oh, I would like to know what else you're doing besides Tour de Quarantine. I mean, obviously you're kind of stuck in your apartment. Are you able to get out and ride that? That is a beautiful bike path that I can see from my
window. Not so much on days where it's busy outside. I can kind of gauge the traffic from my window. So if there are a lot of people out, I do stay inside. But, you know, having the advantage of being now, let's say, self-employed, I can get out and ride whenever I want. So I try and go at the non-peak hours when it's not too crowded out on the path. But, yeah, I have been getting out of the apartment, trying to get some sunshine and vitamin D.
So I need you to tell my listeners how they can watch the Tour de Quarantine. Can they get back to stage 1 and watch it? I mean, they aren't long stages. But
no, each stage I keep to 2 minutes and 20 seconds because that's the Twitter upload limit. That's the maximum length for a Twitter video. So
aren't you clever?
Every day of racing is under 2 minutes and 20 seconds. They're also on my YouTube. You can go back and watch all the stages back to back. They're on a nice playlist on my YouTube page, and then I post them to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter every day. Usually the stages air at sometime between 3 and 4 o'clock Eastern each afternoon. But if you want to go catch up on them right now, YouTube is probably the best way to do it. It's just Brad Stoner on YouTube, BradSohner.
And we will post that on our social media, too. Well, I know we are all sort of hunkered down. It's fun to have some entertainment that reminds us of bike racing, even though it doesn't look exactly like the Peloton. One of the cool things you do, though, is bring in some finish line stuff that I won't tell people about and put some audio to it. And I cracked up when I watched yesterday's stage, watching this guy talk about that dog. Anyway, Brad Stoner, he is a race announcer for all kinds of events and hunkered down at home like we all are here in the U.S. Thank you so much for talking with me. I hope we are out of quarantine soon and you're back to doing what you do.
Thanks for having me. Can't wait to wrap this up. It'll be a good day when the Tour de Quarantine can finally end. It'll be bittersweet, but we're going to get there one day.
I know. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. To catch all the stages of the Tour de Quarantine, you can go to Brad Stoner's YouTube channel, Brad, B-R-A-D, Stoner, S-O-H-N-E-R. It will be interesting to see what he does with the 2 other stage events he's planning. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear my April 22nd, 2017 encore conversation with the master of frame painting, Joe Bell. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
Are back. I'm Diane Jenks, and you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. One quick note before we hear my conversation with Joe Bell from 2017, and that is that as I was preparing for the show this week, I got the message that the Tokyo Olympics have a new date and have been rescheduled to run from July 23rd through August 8th of 2021. There will probably be more announcements about other events this week. So, frame painting is probably one of the most difficult and perhaps least appreciated parts of the custom builder's process. In fact, many builders don't paint their own frames, leaving it to the masters, like my next guest, Joe Bell. If you ask any of his longtime clients, like Richard Sachs or Dave Kirk or Grant Peterson, there isn't a better paint master out there.
Hi, Joe. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Thank you for speaking with me, Diane. We sat at the same dinner table at a NABS convention a few years back.
Was that in Denver?
Oh, you know, those are all a blur for me, so I'm not sure. All I know is I didn't have to pay for my drinks that night.
Yeah, those are always good nights, you know? I don't remember which one it was either, but was Brian there or was I by myself? Do you remember that?
I think you were by yourself. I think Josh Simons paid the bill for the entire table.
Oh, so. That was definitely Denver.
Okay.
That was
great.
It was
great. A lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and I actually remember the dinner. It was. Well, before we get started talking about Joe Bell, the painter, tell me about this accident you had, this crash you had, because you've been out of commission for several weeks.
Yes, well, I finally got the surgery to fix my shoulder, but a year and a half ago, I was on my favorite ride going downhill. I was in the zone, and I trusted a car to stay put where they were, and right at the last minute, they pulled out in front of me, and I hit the car, bounced off the car and into a fence, and broke several ribs and separated my shoulder, and had to get taken to the hospital and stayed in the trauma unit for about a week. And so just been dealing with that. And I just had shoulder surgery to fix that, and we're getting back up and running again.
Where did you go? You're in San Diego. Did you go to Scripps?
No, Sharp Memorial Hospital. Oh. They were great.
Yeah, that's good. It's nice to have a good doctor. Shoulder surgery is it can be really iffy. I'm glad you found somebody you like.
Yeah. So right now I'm kind of worthless around the shop. I'm just in here getting in the way, but I'm slowly getting back into sanding. I can't spray yet, but my assistant, John Pucci, is stepping up to the plate real good and taking care of things for me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Joe Bell Painter. Everybody talks about Joe Bell when we're talking about paint on bicycles. And I'd like to know a little bit more about you from the background, where you grew up, your education, how you became interested in paint and painting bicycles. Because, you know, mostly I talk with frame builders.
Well, my father was in the Navy, and we traveled. Every 3 years, we'd go to a new duty station. And so I went to lots of places around the country. The funnest place I ever lived was Kodiak, Alaska. That was a great place to be a kid. You know, you could have breakfast, just go split on your Stingray all day long, come back home at dinner, and nobody knew where you were or really cared where you were, and we just had a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. But we ended up in Imperial Beach, California, just south of San Diego. It's a little beach town where my dad and mom retired, and I wasted most of my teenage years there. I graduated high school and went to the local junior college, got an AA degree in general ed, and then I was kind of directionless and was riding my bike quite a bit. And I found my way to Casa de Oro Cycles in Spring Valley. I was looking for a derailleur because I was already spray canning bikes in my garage, putting them back together, cleaning them up, and riding them and having fun. And I was looking for a nice Hooray Jubilee derailleur, and somebody told me that Casa de Oro might have it. They were the best bike shop in town, so I rode the 25 miles one way on my Schwinn Superior, and when I walked in the doors to that place, it was like Alice in Wonderland. All these beautiful imported Italian frames on one side of the wall, the other side of the wall had all the touring gear you needed, glass cases with all the componentry that all I'd ever seen was in magazines. And it was just a moment that changed everything for me.
Put that in the context of time. What year was that?
That was about 1977.
Okay.
And so, everything was like that then. And so pretty soon I was hanging around there so much that Bill Holland had to charge me rent or hire me. So I started working there. He was already building frames a little bit and painting on the side because he saw a need for that. And when he decided to sell the shop a few years later, he cut everybody loose and asked me if I wanted to come and work with him painting. And I had done a little bit of proof canning in my garage, but he's the one who showed me how to stir a can of paint and use a real spray gun. And we just kind of moved on from there. And I've been kind of doing it ever since. I guess lack of ambition has kept me here, but I always told myself I'd just get a regular job if the bikes ran out, and they just never did.
They probably never will, given the position you're in right now. You seem to have, regardless of the educational background, an incredible depth of understanding and knowledge about color and how paint reacts. And I know that that's really important. I went to art school and I do understand color, but I've never really understood knowing what happens when something gets painted and why color will change the way it does. So can you tell us a little bit about your understanding of how paint works?
Well, I only know what I've been taught. I never went to school for any of this, so it's all gleaned from experience mostly, and I've made just about every mistake at least twice. And so you just learn what works and what doesn't, and sometimes paint will surprise you and not do what it's supposed to do, so it can be real tricky. Most of the frame builders I know that paint tell me that the paint process is more difficult than the frame building process, because so many things can go wrong. There's so many nuances that if one thing goes wrong, it kind of brings you back to square one and can sometimes take the pee out of profit.
Is your typical experience that when you spray a color, it's going to dry lighter or darker? Do you know that, or does everything react differently?
Good quality automotive paint enamels pretty much lay down and look the way you spray them. When it goes on, that's the way it's going to look when it dries. I haven't had much experience with, like, house paints will do that. They'll dry lighter or darker, but automotive paints don't really do that. What you see is what you get. And once you put the clear on, everything comes out real nice and looks good.
I know that there are different finishes. Some people like pearls, some people like just a flat or, you know, gloss or whatever. What's the most popular paint these days? What are people asking for?
Well, for me, mostly people want just good, clean work. They don't usually ask for crazy stuff, although a few people want me to do some insane stuff, and I'm turning more and more of that over to my assistant, who is a talented artist and has a lot of creativity and is a masking wizard, but mostly just good, clean work. Runs the gamut from all sorts of different colors, pearls and candies and things like that, panels. Lug lining is something I'm fairly well known for. There's just lots of things. I follow what the customer would like and listen to them. And if they want something that I don't think I'm the guy for, I'll refer them to another painter. The other painters always appreciate it, and the customer likes it because just sending them away and telling them to pound sand. Customers just appreciate it if I'm not their guy, that I can give them a phone number or two and say, this guy will take care of you. I usually will ask people if what they want, I ask them where they are and find a painter close to them that might work with them. If you can go local with your bike painter, it's usually a lot better.
You know, that's really an interesting point. I mean, I've been asking people, have you ever fired a customer? But that approach, I think, is really helpful, that you offer to at least give some assistance to the person saying, I'm not your guy. Maybe XYZ is. And I think that might be a better approach. Although I know some people just really upset people and they're just like, no, I'm not doing that for you. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Joe Bell. He's in San Diego getting healed up from a shoulder surgery. So he's not wielding a paint gun these days. When are you going to be able to get back to doing that? Do you know?
Well, I'm already standing a little bit and doing what I can. I can't really lift my arms very far, but whatever I can do, I'm in here trying to. And standing is something I'm starting to do. But my doctors have told me not to overdo it. They say 6 to 8 week recovery, and I'm in week 3. But I tend to push things a little bit. So,
yeah, really, you're a guy.
You got to keep going.
I was going to ask you about color matching. So people often want you to match. I mean, I've had people come in and say, well, I want to get a bike and I want it to match my car. Well, that's pretty easy because you can go to the car manufacturer and say, you know, give me the paint number for that. But do people ask for weird colors to match like their dog's eyes or something weird like that?
Sometimes they do. I do ask people for samples, or I try to get a feel for what they're after, because I mix almost all of my own colors now. Most of the stuff I use now is obsolete and hasn't been distributed in California for years. So I've stockpiled paint. It's DuPont Imron, good stuff. Methyl ethyl, bad stuff is what I call it.
And, I was going to ask if you still used Imron.
I do. Like I said, I've inherited some, and you know, I've had a bunch of it over the years, and so I think I probably have a lifetime supply at this point. And we parse it out pretty tightly, so there's not a lot of waste. But I ask people what they're after, and sometimes I'll have them send me a sample. I've had people send me shirts, fingernail polish, shoes, model cars, glass bottles, you name it. And we try to get everything to the way they like it, but I do ask clients to be rigidly flexible and say, you know, it's going to look great, but it may not be the exact shade that you have in your mind's eye, because I have to custom make everything. But we're pretty good at nailing color samples and things like that. But most everybody really happy with the level of quality.
Yes, I would say that's true. I would say that's very true. Yeah, everybody says Joe Bell is the best painter in the business. I wanted to also ask you about what is so difficult about painting a bike. So I know that it is very different, and painting bicycles is not easy. What is it that makes it so difficult?
Well, probably the small round tubes, tight corners, varying angles. All these places are difficult to spray into and get everything even, so that you're not all puddled up in one area and light in another. So it does present special challenges. And so over time, you need to develop a consistent pattern as to how you spray it, so that you don't get too much in the lugs and you get enough on the tubes so that everything looks even. It's very important when you're spraying pearls and candies and things like that. Those are difficult colors. There's lots of steps to them. So it really takes a bit of skill. Car painters hate painting bicycles generally. They don't like the small stuff.
I agree.
And I don't like painting cars.
There you have it. So it seems to work out really well.
Yes.
Do you paint your own decals, or do you use pre-cut products?
I've got lots of decals. I've got one of the best decal stashes around, but we do both. Painters nowadays need to have familiarity with the vinyl cutter, otherwise you're off the back. So we'll make stencils for lots of different things, but if we have decals, we like to use those too. So you really have to use both nowadays.
This just occurred to me. I am sure you know Cunningham. Is it Susan and Jim?
Oh, Jim and Sue? Uh-huh.
Yeah, and did they sell CycleArt?
They did. They sold to HIA Velo, which is based in Little Rock.
Right,
and,
to Tony Kirkland's.
Right, and they're starting up a big company. I think they're off and running, and they're going to be producing carbon frames and things like that. And so they hired Jim and Sue to run their paint shop. So they've got a wealth of experience, and they have done custom and production work. So it's probably a good fit for them. So Tony probably had to offer him a couple of bucks to get out of California and move to Little Rock. But
I would think so. They were in the Carlsbad area, as I remember, somewhere around there. Yeah.
They had been painting here for longer than I had. They started out in the 70s all.
Yeah. I mean, years ago when I had my first bike shop, which was back in the 70s, that was where you would send repaints, was to Cycle Art. You know, I didn't really know anybody.
They started it all. They were the first people that really took bicycle painting to the next level, at least in the U.S. They were people that that I looked up to see what was going on when I was first starting out with a little proof can in the garage.
You know, I wanted to ask you what happens when a bike comes in or a frame comes in for a repaint. You strip the bike down and find out it needs repair. What is the next step for you besides contacting the customer and saying your bike needs repair? I mean, what do you do? Do you send it out for repair or do you send it back to the customer?
Well, it depends on what's wrong. Usually we can see what's wrong before the paint gets stripped. But sometimes with things like powder coating, which is a little bit thicker, it can hide holes from rust or whatever, things like that. So once we've identified what the problem is, we set about to fix it. I've got a frame guy here who's been at it forever. He's a dinosaur, too, but he's a frame builder's frame builder named Rob Robertson. And he's got a lot of chops, and he's a real metal wizard. So if it's just retubing something or fixing holes, he can do pretty much anything he wants to do. It's just at his discretion whether he'll do it or not. So we can usually fix it right here in-house. But we always let the customer know what's going on before we move forward.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I just had another question. Of course, it just blew right out of my head when you said that. Well, you know what? I do want to talk about the work you do at sort of, I don't want to call it contract work, but yet I guess it kind of is. You do the painting for Dave Kirk and for Richard Sachs and for Grant Peterson at Rivendell. If you do all of those things, how do you have time to paint other frames?
Well, there is a turnaround time here. People tend to wait. I try to put the frame builders first because I am affecting their cash flow by sitting on these frames. So we try to move those in a somewhat consistent manner. And people who call me up for repaints or restorations or whatever will wait a little bit longer. And they're usually always pretty happy about that. They're fine. I always ask them to have another bike to ride while I have my way with their frame. And so it seems to work out, but there's always a backlog. It never ends, but I can't just send this stuff out the door subpar. Everything has to look just right. So that old Cannondale's got to look great, as well as the Richard Sachs that goes out right behind it.
So I remembered my question, and that is, and you sort of just answered it, you don't only paint steel frames.
No, we paint all materials here. The prep is different for different materials, but metal is pretty much prepped the same. It has to get chemically stripped if there is a paint job on there now. And then we lightly sandblast it with a special, well, not a special sand, but good quality sand so that it does not impinge on the frame. And then we go from there with the priming, sanding, any kind of putty work, and we just keep on prepping until it's just right, and then we're ready for color. Carbon is a little different. You have to just hand sand that, get it all smooth, seal it up, and then move from there with your colors.
So painting forks, is that like an ungodly difficult thing to do?
Forks, no problem. We've done that from the start. I encourage people to paint the fork along with their bike. Many times people will send me a frame, and I say, where's the fork? Oh, well, it's carbon, or it's black, or it's something. I'm just going to leave it like it is. And I encourage them to paint the fork the same color as the bike so it looks like a cohesive unit and that it looks like it was meant to be there. And that's probably just something from back in the old days when I was riding. If your bike had a different color fork, it meant that you crashed and had to replace it with something.
That's true. I didn't think of that. Sure.
So, but occasionally people will just say, no, I want to leave the fork alone. And that's okay.
What do you ride? What's your favorite bike?
The only bike I've ever had that was actually made for me is a Holland Titanium, and that is my go-to bike. I've got a whole bunch of bikes hanging on the ceiling that are vintage, and back when I was racing, it was no problem, and I would race those, and I didn't have any fit issues and didn't really care much. I just rode them. And but now that I have a bike that actually works for me, I only ride the vintage bikes when there's some kind of an oldies parade or something. I love the new stuff. So, well, this bike is relatively old. It's 14 years old, so, but it still fits me.
Well, it's titanium.
Mm-hmm. Made by Bill Holland.
Here's the really cool question. Is your Thai bike painted?
It is. It's gray.
Well, why not?
It's not really gray. It looks gray indoors, but I've got this stuff called Prismatique on it, and it's really sparkly and pimpy. And so you take it outside, and it assaults your eyeballs with sparkle. So
I remember Prismatique color. It is crazy.
I love it. I love shiny stuff. I definitely am a monkey.
All right. Now you have to answer my three crazy questions. What's your favorite food?
White Castle sliders?
No. Really? Is there White Castle out there?
No, there's no White Castle.
Oh, I didn't think so. That's a Midwest thing.
My shop is right across the street from the best Mexican cuisine in San Diego. It's called Rana's. And so I'd probably have to say it's Mexican food. The best Mexican food around is in San Diego, and it's right in my backyard.
Yeah, it seems like frame builders and Mexican food seem to go together, so maybe painters do too.
Yeah, goes good with beer too.
Yeah, well, there is the beer part. I forgot about that. What about music? What do you listen to?
Well, generally during the day, the shop is quiet somewhat. We're just kind of sanding and tinkering, but when everybody goes home and I'm still working, I might put some things on. But I like everything. Everything from the Chai Lights to King Crimson to Karen Carpenter and Led Zeppelin, who knows? No death metal, but I like a lot of stuff.
That's a pretty eclectic combination right there. All right,
yeah.
The last question is always about my favorite. Do you have any pets?
My wife and I have two dogs, a little deerhead chihuahua named Goober and a little Jack Russell Terrier pug rescue named Charlie. And Charlie, he's got a lot of energy. He's really something else. My wife picked him up off the street. He was a homeless dog. And, he hit the lottery when she picked him up.
No kidding.
He's doing just great now, living large.
Exactly. Well, Jack Russells seem to, like, never sleep or something like that.
Oh, he sleeps. But he's a good little dog, and we love him.
Well, I hope your shoulder heals up really, really well and really, really fast. I really appreciate you talking with me today. How can people find out more about Joe Bell?
Slip your money under the door if I'm not here.com.
I see the sense of humor hasn't changed.
Yeah, well, the painkillers are kicking in pretty good.
There you go.
Well, if that link doesn't work, you can try joebell.net.
And there you have it. Well, Joe, thanks so much for talking with me. I hope to see you at NABS in Connecticut maybe next year if I get out there. I didn't get to Salt Lake this year, and we'll see. Maybe I'll be able to get out there.
Great. Well, thank you for speaking with me. I sure appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
I told the friend that you were going to be speaking with me, and he said, oh, wow, Diane must be jonesing for material to speak with you.
Oh, that's not fair. You tell your friend that it's an honor to speak with Joe Bell. And I wonder, I probably know him, right?
No, he's just one of the guys around here. But I laughed and said, well, she might be, but it's probably just my turn.
It's actually way past your turn. And I'm really glad to have been able to talk with you. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. I appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Joe Bell joined me from his shop in San Diego. He's pretty much a character, and he is, without a doubt, the best painter in our business, as far as I know. That's what everybody says. Well, Richard Sachs for sure, Dave Kirk for sure, Grant Peterson for sure. And if you look at joebell.net, you'll be able to see his work and find out more about how to get your bike painted by him, but you're going to wait a while.
I hope you enjoyed the encore presentation of my conversation with painter Joe Bell. Perhaps you're thinking of a new frame and will need a paint job, or having your frame refurbished. Or maybe you just want to see some outstanding work. Regardless of your reason, if you have an interest, log on to joebell.net. My thanks to Brad Soner for brightening our day with his clever videos in Tour de Quarantine. Once again, you can watch all the stages on Brad's YouTube channel. As you may remember, I asked what was on your reading stand last week, and I got some really interesting answers. You are reading some heavy stuff, including A Brief History of Seven Killings, A Good Provider is One Who Leaves, One Family and Migration in the 21st Century, 40 Ways to Look at Winston Churchill, and World War Z. Clearly, I need to add some titles to my list, which, as usual, consists of a lot of cycling-related tomes. So this week's question, what's the first thing you think you'll do when the all-clear is sounded by your community after this pandemic? Please remember that you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. Send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without the E. You can leave a comment on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. We will be back next week with a brand new show. I think you'll really enjoy our guest. Yes, I'm keeping it a surprise, but I think you'll really like her. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.